Space, the final frontier. Space Station Ashlyn sits on the edge of Federation space with its companion ship, the USS Delamis Christian. The space around them is full of mystery and strange wonders, where secrets are kept and danger lurks around every corner. The crew of the Delamis Christian must navigate treacherous waters as they work to protect the Federation. But as they peer into the unknown, they will discover that the line between friend and foe is not always clear. They will be tested like never before, and will face challenges that will push them to their limits. Join us on this adventure as we explore the farthest reaches of space and uncover the hidden truths that lie within the shadows. Tabletop Journeys presents Star Trek: Preservations. Last time on Star Trek Preservations.
My first question is concerning the tapestry, or possibly multiple tapestries. But you mentioned that there's a bright blue-eyed figure with some figures around him.
Correct. Tanari, you haven't seen these yet, but again, you walk into the science office and you basically see, at this point, what's probably several open crates with various artifacts strewn on tables and science personnel scanning them in with, like, hand scanners and stuff like that.
Go for saving.
This is Lieutenant Tanari Derriman's science lab. Lieutenant Narilla and I have something we'd like you to take a look at, and quite possibly Lieutenant Najar as well. There may be a connection between what happened at Tethys and what happened on the Breen asteroid.
Really?
All right, here we go. We are going to begin our final act of the evening with Narilla appearing back in the science lab with Lieutenant Dory. And Lieutenant Dory is saying that the computer has finished compiling the holodeck program that she told you about and seems very excited at the possibility. But she understands that, I get it. We need to wait. We're not there yet, but it's ready whenever you are.
I'm awaiting your orders, sir.
I will calm Commander Sabian and also Lieutenant Tanari and let them know that it's a available possibility for us to use.
Let them know it produced like four different scenes. Bunch of different stuff.
I'll continue the comms out of earshot, and then I'll wait. I feel like I don't necessarily want to jump into this without approval.
Your lieutenant's shown a lot of initiative. Let's take a look and see what they put together. What can possibly go wrong? Sabian grabs his mug of tea, starts heading to the turbo lift. Holodeck 1.
So you call Tobor and Tanari, okay? And Ocean and Najar are continuing their investigation. Fabulous. So the pad on the outside of the holodeck lists four potential entry points. The first one is a mountain path in rocky terrain. It's basically the extent of the explanation. It also says that there are a half a dozen humanoids within a couple hundred feet of the entry point as an indication of what it would be getting into. So the second chapter is a gathering of 13 humanoids, unknown purpose. The other one is described as like a mass conflict featuring medieval style or classical era warfare with spears and swords and shields, but a bird's eye view, so not on the ground, but observation from afar. And really, you're seeing some connection to that and maybe the tapestry fragments that you found, that kind of thing. And then the last one is described as a artistic performance interpreted to reference a stellar event of some sort.
First of all, I would like to double check to make sure the safety protocols are intact.
I had that same thought.
The safety protocols on the holodeck are, in fact, still on. Maybe it's just that Tanari is more paranoid than usual. Something triggers, like, the hairs on the back of your neck. Would you like to, and I'm offering a challenge, to try and double-check the security and maybe take efforts to isolate the systems again? Maybe it's based on your fear earlier when you tried to run some code and it didn't work properly. Something like that. Do you have any interest in doing that?
Yes, I very much would.
You very much would. What would you like to bid to try to make sure that the holodecks are truly on an isolated circuit and not kind of potentially messing with other things?
Since I'm doing this right here, right now, with my captain over my shoulder, I think maybe daring engineering.
You are so great at daring engineering.
Since it looks like we're out of momentum, I would like to expend a threat to get an extra dice.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Does that bring you up to three?
And will my computer focus?
Are holodecks a computer thing?
I'm assuming I'm working on the programming, so that's why I'm bidding for computers.
Yeah, you want to, like, make sure, like, the systems are isolated. Mm-hmm. Sure, that makes sense.
And is it possible to get someone to roll for the ship's computer?
Certainly. Ocean, why don't you roll for the computer?
Let me go ahead and roll. A 3, and a 10, and a 9, so that's 4 successes.
Nice.
I rolled a 6 on a computers of 9.
So you spent 1 threat, gained 3 momentum. That's a nice trade-off. So, yeah, you feel like you are able to ensure that all of the holodeck computer core is basically partitioned off from the rest of the computer core, solid firewall to go ahead and contain them. You feel much better about this one than the last time. You
realize kind of my earlier thing.
Yeah, exactly. You, like, learn from your mistakes. Oh, I forgot about that bitwise motion back and forth. Would you like to use the momentum that you gained for anything else on the challenge, or do you just want to bank it?
I think I'd like to bank it at this point.
Okay.
I can't think of any questions I would like answered.
Sure. All right. And given the 4 choices of what chapter, so to speak, you would like to enter the holodeck program, what's the consensus? Where would you like to go?
Captain?
Shall we start from the beginning?
I can agree with that.
Very good. Computer, chapter 1, open arch.
The door opens, and just as the description suggests, kind of like a step type environment, so like low grasses, rocky outcroppings, that kind of thing. And you can hear voices from around the corner. The language sounds a little stilted, almost as if the universal translator doesn't really have enough information, but they are talking about troop movement, and they are talking about looking for spies and interlopers. And they are around a corner, so you can't see them, but they are close enough that you can hear and make out their conversation without any problem. Some other options, Tanari, while you were configuring. Do you want the holodeck suite to basically run on the movie mode where you're just observing everything, or on interactive mode where they will believe that you are part of the event that's going on?
Let's go with movie mode, especially considering they're talking about trying to root out spies.
Sure. Yep. Assuming you follow the voices, then go around the corner. Like a half dozen tall, thin, humanoid-looking aliens. They have blue skin, like a purple frill around the crown of their heads, and white horns that kind of emerge and trail back, almost the species in Star Wars with the
Twi'leks.
Almost like Twi'leks, but not quite as long and more rigid, for the better terms. And there are just a half dozen of them dressed in what you would assume to be like Greek-era clothing, so shin armor and like padded breastplates and spears and swords and stuff like that, but very much seem of that era. And they are talking about how they are a forward scouting party that is scouring the mountainside here looking for spies from the aggressors. And they pick up a search routine. So you just continue to follow them as they're like moving through these mountain passes. After a few minutes, a bunch of rocks fall off of an outcropping like right in front of them. They immediately go to a defensive posture, and one individual jumps into the middle of their party. They are wearing different color on their robes, you know, like slightly different clothing, almost as if they're cold. The other ones are dressed as if it's in like a warm Mediterranean kind of environment. These are dressed as if they are cold. It's wrapped up significantly more. It's some sort of like environmental regulation kind of thing. And the one individual kind of jumps into the middle of this half dozen people, has like a dagger in their hand that does not seem to gel with the make of the weapons of the other group, and to a man, slaughters them in front of you, and then basically in a somewhat supernatural jump leaps back up to the position that he was up on the rock outcropping, and as far as you can tell, disappears.
I kind of glance over to Tanari. I'm like, you're pretty good with an Ushan, but that seemed a lot.
Yeah. I haven't seen many Klingons who would be that good.
And I go, computer, based off of the artifact record, the lone individuals of what species identified in the artifacts?
The computer will reply that based on a linguistic analysis of the template, all the individuals in this chapter refer to themselves as Mothlanons, which is not a known species or culture to exist in Starfleet database.
And can the computer confirm what planet this is, whether this is actually Tethys?
Okay. It is indeed Tethys.
So that was like chapter one?
Yeah, and the computer asks if you would like to replay chapter one or if you'd like to move on to chapter two.
No, I don't need to see much more of that.
Do we know how long ago this scene took place?
According to linguistic analysis, the events in this chapter probably happened 100 years before the tablet that it was found on. Basically, this was pieced together from a historical account of something that had happened maybe 100 years before. Dating on the artifacts suggests that they date anywhere from 50 to 60,000 years ago. Not quite Iconian old, but...
That's a long time.
Really long time ago.
The individual who jumped down and killed the others, did he have the glowing blue eyes?
He did not.
Okay.
Anybody in the
no.
scene? Okay.
No, they did not. The extent of the difference between the two that you could find is that the one that jumped down did seem to be superiorly athletic to the rest of them. Either that individual just was a superior athlete compared to the other six, caught them by surprise, something like that. There are some plausible explanations, but it did seem like there was a clear physical difference between them. But also they were definitely dressed differently, and not just like in different uniforms, but as if they were from sort of different cultures or experienced this environment in different ways. And their weaponry was also distinctly different.
So are you ready for chapter two?
Okay. Chapter one, the holodeck sort of fades. You see the blue with the yellow check marks. And then when it comes up, you are in a very nondescript sort of dark room, as if like the terrain itself can't be ascertained or anything like that. What you do see is a circle of people who are dressed similarly to the athletic individual that leapt out of the mountains. And there is one person in particular who is not dressed like them that's being held against their will by the other 12. And as the scene plays on, another individual is granted passage in between, sort of let into the circle. And there's something about their mannerisms that there's just something different about them. They clearly stand out. And the other people that are holding this person, the other 12, definitely seem to show a degree of deference to this other person, as if it is a leader or something like that. And the person that entered the circle brushes their hand over the face of the individual and says some sort of incantation. Again, the language model is incomplete in the universal translators, but it's something like, be more now than you were before, be our breath, be our life, be our light. And the individual that's being held very clearly and somewhat violently begins desperately trying to pull out from the people that are containing him. And for a brief moment, his eyes become these glowing blue orbs, intense light shining out from them around the room. And then after a few minutes, it subsides and he looks perfectly normal. He stands up and looks a little surprised, and then the other ones robe him in the same sort of colder weather gear that they're wearing, and he steps back and joins the circle. And the leader or the kind of figurehead fades into the past, and the program stops. Ocean, where are you right now?
I am probably in my quarters.
Fabulous. So just sitting at your desk, like reviewing personnel files or data or something like that. Yep. As you're like looking at the stationary pad that's built on your desk as you're reading things, on the display, regardless of what page you're looking at or what it is that you're reading, a purple button appears in the lower right-hand corner of your display. And on the purple button is the Greek symbol for Epsilon.
I don't have any sort of extra security settings in the room or anything like that. So I would look around just instinctively, realize I'm by myself, sigh, and hit the button.
As you hit the button, a small command prompt pops up on your screen, and several lines of code are beginning to filter by. You are able to see what's going on, pick out bits and pieces of it. Things like containment protocol activated, suspected incursion beginning, dex, blah, 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 isolated.
It's running through what the commands are, not that it's actually running these commands.
No, it's as if there are some things happening, and it is reporting that they're happening on your screen. And the deck that it reports as being isolated does happen to be the deck where the holodeck is.
But it is not to worry about, guys.
You are not in Epsilon protocol. It's almost as if
it's reading it as a potential.
Exactly. And they're going to blow the full six as like a full scene reversal here, or full five rather.
You can go ahead and take six.
I'm sure I could, but it has not put the ship on lockdown. It is reporting that it is recording all log activity that is happening on the ship, and that it is establishing a one-way secure portal to what's referred to as Epsilon Command.
One-way communication portal?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. You see a variety of these commands, establishing a one-way communication portal to Epsilon Command, logs compacting and transmitting, that sort of thing, as if it's sending information through this one-way portal.
Okay. But it's telling me that something's happening in the holodeck. So
it is telling you that something is happening that has isolated the deck where the holodeck is. No unknown source, and it's giving you like a series of prompts. Do you wish to disable the transporters? Do you wish to engage Epsilon protocol? Do you wish to engage the biometric decontaminant process? That sort of thing.
Okay. Computer, list personnel currently on deck six, which I'm just going to assume is the holodeck.
Yep. It lists a variety of non-important personnel that happen to be on the deck that the holodeck is in. It also lists Nari, Narila, and Commander Soap. For you, okay. It'll let you know that the three of them are there and that deck is isolated.
Okay. Motion to Commander Tobor. I try to open a comm link directly to him.
Sure. The computer advises you that communications to Commander Tobor are not allowed at this moment.
Okay.
I want to make sure, Ocean, that this is not a notification you've ever seen before. Every time that Epsilon protocol has been triggered before, it's getting everything blazing, everybody move, we've got a situation. This seems much more like the computer is trying to sort some stuff out more than anything else. Your experience with technology and everything would draw you to that conclusion. So before we continue with you in your quarters, Najjar, we haven't gone to you for a little while here. So what is Najjar up to right now? Nothing seems to be amiss to him right now.
No. So Najjar is in his quarters, standing in front of a big glass screen or an off-computer, giant wall-sized computer monitor with a grease pencil, working on a murder board for species Epsilon and their hierarchy of needs. And he's got like them in the middle and circles and lines going out to different things like food. And then another thing that says, what the hell do they eat? Do we even know that? Things like that. And trying to piece together what they might be interested in. And it's got lots of complicated things on it, too, based on the data that we've been able to come up. Just trying to make connections where he doesn't have connections yet so he can get it like all out in front of him and draw lines to connect things. And
interesting.
And there's some kind of music playing in the background, maybe some nice Klingon opera.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question, Najjar, and I make no guarantees that the answer that you're going to come up with is correct or not, but what's the most interesting connection that Najjar has made on his little murder board there?
The most interesting connection that Najjar has made to species Epsilon trying to get on the ship and what's on this ship that they could possibly want continues to be details of Epsilon protocol itself. To know our defenses and what they're up against.
Species Epsilon is somehow aware of Epsilon protocol, is what you're saying.
Indeed, because he hasn't been able to figure out a single thing that Starfleet would have installed that they would want based on the needs of their species. But they wanted this ship and something that was on this ship. And the only thing that Najar can come up with so far that's specific to them on this ship is Epsilon Protocol.
Oof.
Possibly some form of biological matter in a containment unit somewhere that fuels Epsilon Protocol. Maybe there's a bit of a bug somewhere and something that is set up so that the sensors have something to compare to. And like, if this shows up, he's not sure, but he's working on trying to eliminate all other possibilities.
Excellent.
Because if he can, that's what it's got to be.
I love it. That's a fabulous answer. Excellent. All right. So before we go back to our friends in the Holo Suite, Ocean, so last when we left you, you'd had a couple of prompts appear on your terminal and some indications of information going just in one direction to Epsilon Command. Basically, that all ship logs had been downloaded to Epsilon Command. All command logs had been downloaded to Epsilon Command. That kind of thing. Things that you know happen when Epsilon Protocol gets engaged. Okay. Right? That's a known commodity. But you were presented with a series of prompts asking you to disable certain systems, isolate certain areas of the ship, and even asking if you wanted to trigger a full Epsilon Protocol or begin what it called its biologic decontamination process. How are you responding?
So first thing, what I had been doing at the time was updating my own logs and considering I was documenting the information from the senior staff meeting at that point, I'd want to ensure that my logs were in that bundle, just to make sure that I don't have to resend anything.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. The second thing that I would want to make sure of is the locations that originally were designated as safe areas.
Yes.
Were the bridge.
Yes.
Engineering, and where else?
The designated safe zones are the bridge, sick bay, and the engineering department, because the three people with the keys to go ahead and ensure operation of the ship when Epsilon Protocol is engaged are the captain, the XO, and the chief engineer.
All right. And does the bridge include the captain's ready room?
It would not. No, I don't believe so. It's exclusively the bridge.
Okay. So I would allow it to disable transporters. And as I'm doing this, I'm going to set up a communicator comm to Najar.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Najar, meet me on the bridge. We have a situation.
As he taps his comm badge, you hear some Klingon opera wailing in the background. He says, absolutely, Commander. I'll meet you there immediately.
And as I'm going towards the bridge myself, I'm going to attempt to use the pad that I have that seems to be connected to validate that the containment is at least successful, even if there's no danger of it have gotten out.
Yeah, as far as you can tell, the holosuite that they're in, that deck is isolated from anybody without basically executive clearance. And so that would be you, the captain, and chief engineer.
Okay.
Or I guess like Epsilon clearance is probably how it's classified. But as far as the computer is reporting to you, and as far as you can determine, yes, that deck is isolated. Najar, before you leave your quarters, are you heading right to the bridge to go see Ocean? Or are you doing any checks to go ahead and make any determinations about what's going on?
There are no alarms going off. We're not at any kind of alert. I was just asked to meet on the bridge. He did sound like he had some concerns. Mm-hmm. But if it was something I really needed to be spun up about, I'm confident he would have told me. So I'm pretty much just heading straight there.
Okay, cool. I think at some point we should decide if there's anything in your quarters. Would you know that the transporters had been shut off, for example? Do you have any kind of a board in your room that shows you the status of all the stuff on the ship or something like that? But
perhaps.
Yep. While you guys are in transit, Narila, Tobor, and Tanari, you are at this point unaware of anything happening outside of the holodeck. Nobody has notified you or anything like that. But after you saw the last scene, and you remember the last scene seemed to be of this sort of assimilation type scene where a circle of like-minded individuals were around another individual that seemed not necessarily willing to be there, when one of the like-minded individuals came up to them. And you've seen how Species Epsilon functions when they take over a host. I think you made reference to how they enter and everything like that.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. So it almost looks like the scene that you saw was, if somebody had seen that but did not have the scientific knowledge to understand what was happening and then had to describe it to another person, that's what this scene looked like. But the key part of this was that the individual who was not necessarily willing to be there when the head persons did their ritual, for a moment of time their eyes turned into bright blue globes, and then after a period of time went back to normal. They looked unharmed and they joined the circle with kind of an attitude adjustment, seeming like they wanted to go ahead and be there. And the Holodeck reports that is the end of the second chapter.
I know I'm not there, but just for clarification, nothing crawled into this thing's mouth?
Correct.
Thank you.
Very good. Computer, chapter three.
So chapter three begins with kind of a bird's eye view of Fields of Marathon style battle, where you see large armies on each side warring at each other with hand weaponry, swords and spears and shields and stuff like that, like classic era type battles. It seems definitely that there are two opposed armies. Let's see, which among you is probably the most tactically minded? Yeah, probably Tobor. I'd like you to go ahead and make me a roll. This would be like a one difficulty task to learn some things about the battle that you're seeing in front of you. So,
can I use my tactics and strategy focus?
You absolutely can use tactics and strategy focus. That would probably be the most appropriate focus on your list
here. So I'm going to use Insight Command.
I like it.
To glean insightful information about this battle. So that would be a 5 and an 8, so 3 successes.
So you gain 2 momentum. The first thing that you see is that not only are there kind of two distinct armies, but that they both function differently. One of the armies seems to be much more made up of your kind of traditional command structure, right? Where there are small units that have squad leader. That squad leader seems to be feeding information back to a leader of a higher up, going up the chain, and that there may be kind of like a panel of commanders commanding different aspects of the army and everything like that. More of a traditional command structure. The other command structure definitely seems to be more like massive humanity and one person calling the shots. No command structure that you can report necessarily, and no kind of squad commanders, anything like that. They also are significantly quieter than the people with the more traditional command structure.
Interesting. So it's like Roman legion versus Gallic barbarian.
Exactly.
Are they dressed different? Did you mention that?
Yes, that is actually one thing that you noticed also, is that the side that is the more traditionally military structured organization is dressed kind of appropriately for the weather. It's like warmish, desertish, that kind of thing. So they seem to be wearing more appropriate clothes. The group, which has like a single figurehead kind of commanding the entirety of the thing, is dressed as if they are cold. They are wearing more covering, longer clothing, longer sleeves, that sort of thing. Probably not going all the way to like furs and stuff like that, but certainly more than just like a casual tunic.
Any evidence of the blue-eyed people?
You do not see any blue-eyed people on either side.
So, Josh, I'd like to spend a momentum to ask a gain information follow-up question.
I like it.
So the mass of humanity, we'll call them the barbarians for lack of a better term here. Mm-hmm. When we kind of scoop down into the like bird's eye view and around, the horde appears to be moving in a coordinated fashion as though it were being controlled by an Epsilon species queen and all of her drones.
That is a reasonable conclusion based on the evidence that you see in front of you. Yep.
But they're like moving in a way that's not random, right?
Oh, for sure. Their motions are definitely coordinated. That is true. Yeah. They're not just like randomly running all over the place. They are definitely coordinated.
You would expect a horde of individual humanoids to operate in a conflict situation like this, right?
Yeah, we're not talking like zombies from Dawn of the Dead where they seem to be somewhat chaotic. It is definitely a coordinated effort. It just doesn't have the command structure that would normally lead to that level of coordination.
Right. So again, if this ancient civilization didn't really understand what Epsilon species was, it would write a story about this like mind control queen.
Yep, exactly. A very astute observation. Okay. You continue to go ahead and watch that war scene play out for a little while. Mr. Ocean and Mr. Najjar, you find yourselves on the bridge. This kind of, not skeleton crew, but the watch crew that would be appropriate for the time is on the bridge. They seem somewhat surprised to see you on the bridge. Whoever happens to be in the big chair at the time obviously relinquishes immediately, stands at attention. Probably hear like the bosun's whistle, XO on the bridge.
At ease.
Sir?
I will move over to the science station. Ask whoever is attending that station to step aside for the moment. And I want to pull up information on what's going on the holodeck.
Sure.
I want to find out whether or not the readings are in fact coming from the holodeck. And ultimately, I want to try to find out if deactivating the holodeck is going to solve the problem.
That is a very reasonable request. I will happily let you roll for it to make that sort of determination. It's probably like a basic one challenge to get into the terminal to see what's going on the holodeck, and then we can go from there. The one thing before you roll for it is you also know that when Epsilon Protocol is engaged, there's a different voice that comes out of the computer. It's not your normal like Majel Barrett, happy sing-songy voice. It is a much more stern Commodore Pritchard that comes out of the voice. When you ask for that information, it immediately asks for voice authorization.
I give it my voice authorization.
All right, and it says voice authorization accepted, so go ahead and make your roll.
Okay. This would be science, which is not my strongest suit, but it would also probably be reason.
Sure. You can do science reason.
While you're working on it, Najjar walks up and says, "What's up? How can I help?"
And I hand him the pad, which shows him what's going on, that there's been the detection of the Epsilon event on that deck. Computer's still trying to figure out what's going on. I'm pretty sure it's the holodeck. I got one success on that.
Okay. So there are two holosuites on the Delamis Christian. Mm-hmm. And the Saber class is not a gigantic boat. One of them is in use, and Narila, the captain, and Lieutenant Tanari are listed as in the holosuite.
During the staff meeting, didn't Narila say that Lieutenant Dorai had loaded simulation data about what we brought back from Tethys into the holodeck?
Yes. And I suspect that's what they're looking at right now.
And it initiated this. But it's not a full shutdown. This is...
No, it's trying to figure out what's going on. But something that they recreated triggered the computer to recognize that as an Epsilon event. But that's an interesting point, too. Computer, locate Lieutenant Dorai.
Lieutenant Dorai is in the science lab.
Pull up some sort of video of what they're doing at this point.
What they're doing in the holosuite?
No, what she's doing in the science lab.
Sure. You can see all of the crates of artifacts and everything. Most of them are empty right now, and so she is putting things back in the crates, probably checking it with a hand scanner to make sure that it is tagged and numbered and cataloged and stuff like that. Lieutenant junior grade grunt work.
Fair enough.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we've leveled up our game and we're prepared to make your next roll legendary. We've just started a partnership with FanRoll Dice, and they have over 300 product options to choose from. Gemstone, metal, new liquid core dice, and so much more. Better yet, listeners to the Tabletop Journeys podcast can get 10% off on their orders when they follow the link below and use discount code PODCAST10. A portion of these purchases come back to us, and this is a great way for you to help support the show.
So back to the task at hand.
So how do we get them out?
Until the protocol ends, they're not getting out of there. I'm thinking that simply deactivating the holodeck will solve the problem. I just want to make sure that it's not going to slip to a memory buffer and get in somewhere else.
Right. That seems reasonable. So, because while they may not be in any danger now, if whatever the holodeck is doing that's confusing Epsilon Protocol confuses it enough, we could all be in danger. And the ship could go into full lockdown and self-destruct if we can't fix it again.
Here's what I'm thinking our next step should be. With the exception of commands to shut it down, I want to see if we can isolate the holodeck from the computer core.
That should be possible. Is it something we can do remotely? And Najjar starts typing at a terminal too.
If you are investing in that possibility, Najjar, I would like you to give me a one task roll, please.
And is this my own task or am I assisting in Commander Ocean's role?
That's a good question. Which one of you is searching the computer to go ahead and see how that would happen? This is the task to go ahead and see, can I actually do that? Yeah. Do I have the skill? And does the computer have the ability to do that?
I walked up, asked questions, and started typing for assistance was the way I viewed it.
I'm just pulling up that handy-dandy discipline guide.
So this is probably going to be something engineering.
Right? I guess if you're a veteran computer, yeah, be engineering, yeah.
So reason and engineering sound good?
I would almost say more insight engineering, to make an educated guess about a device or try to understand an artificial creature. Not really an artificial creature, but insight engineering is where I would go with this instead of reason.
Okay, insight engineering is 11 for me, and I do have a focus in security systems. I don't know if that would apply.
You're approaching this from a security mindset, so I'll give that to you.
Okay.
I am not helpful.
All right. Let's see. We have
But I didn't roll four, a critical.
We have four of momentum. I'm going to spend one.
I like it.
I rolled a 20, but I have cautious, so I can re-roll that 20, but let me roll the third dice.
But what do you have cautious in?
Security.
Is this a security task?
It's an engineering task.
Yeah, never mind. You're right. So I have two successes and a complication. Oh, I'm sorry. The success was a critical, so it's three in the complication. Three,
okay. So this is only a one-task challenge because the first thing that you realize when you go to ask the computer, can I do this, is that Tanari already did it before he went in. He made a challenge before they went into the holodeck to do this very thing.
We don't know it.
So you didn't know it at the time, but basically he had taken the effort to go ahead and do exactly that. He basically isolated that whole section of the holodeck from the computer core proper, which now that you're looking at it is, oh, maybe that's why the computer core thinks that something external is happening, because like Tanari was once again too good at his job. So it's like he has protected the ship
without even knowing it.
Exactly. He's protected the ship in a way that actually made something else happen. The complication, however,
is that I reconnected it.
That's actually a pretty great complication, actually. No, I'm going to bank the threat for now while I think of a complication, because I think that there's probably a better time for me to go ahead and try it out.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Because of the way Tanari locked it out from the rest of the computer system, that the complication is that we're unable to shut down.
You may not be able to shut it down, exactly.
Remotely.
Yeah.
We would have to find a way onto the secure deck to shut it down manually.
Actually, I like that. That's a good idea. Done. So you have learned both of those pieces of information.
Glad I could help.
Yeah, that Tanari isolated it, but that also means that you're not going to be able to get into it to shut it down. It either needs to run its natural course. Actually, you're not sure that they're going to be able to shut it down now either, because it's an Epsilon event. So who knows what's going to happen there.
All right. It's disconnected. It's less urgent to shut it down. And we've already established...
Because the rest of the ship isn't in danger.
Yeah, we've already established that we cannot communicate with the commander and that team at this point. And if we can't deactivate the holodeck, I think we're at a holding pattern until we can figure it out. I mean, we have to have our finger on the button for decontamination. But I think at this point, I will provide an update to Epsilon Command and then hope for the best. I have my finger on the button.
While you're doing that, I'm going to comb through all of my security scans of the ship and the engineering schematics and cross-reference and see if I can come up with any way that we could manually get onto that deck in case we do need to shut it down through a jet freeze tube or anything along those lines that may not be sealed with a force field.
I'm spending two threat. When you go to engage with that information, you hear Pritchard's voice asking you for a voice authorization.
We'll provide it.
Okay. So how would that... Because if Najjar is asking for it, I suppose you could provide voice authorization for him to have that information.
He's standing right next to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Fine, then. I won't lock Najjar out.
Meaner. Good.
I still have enough threat for a reversal. Don't be kind. So you're asking basically for schematic information and stuff like that. The schematics are easy to go ahead and come by. You note that where the holo suites is, the entire deck is isolated, and it is seemingly like fully isolated, right? So even bulkheads that are not normally closed or bulkheads that you did not know were there are closed, sort of thing.
Okay. So I can find no manual route.
Correct. The isolation seems complete.
Then, yeah, I guess you're right, Commander. I can find no way in. We're helpless, just sitting here with our finger on the button.
And Ocean, just to make sure, you would remember from before that you had commented that you were one of the few people that would have the authorization to go ahead and enter from when we were talking before.
Yep.
So whether or not you choose to share that or not. Okay.
Yeah, if the Commander hadn't shared that with anybody else, I'm not going to take this opportunity to do so.
All right.
The only thing I can think of is to try to get in from outside the ship, but I don't know that we need to do that at this point.
All right. pause you. Narila, Tobor, Tonari, Chapter 3 ends with seemingly the side controlled by the single mind wins out, eventually swarming and dismantling the rest of the army. They seem to take a handful or 20 or 30 or so prisoners and march them back to their camp after basically obliterating the rest of the army. Seems fairly typical for war type stuff. Tobor, that by itself does not ring any particular alarm bells. It does make you recount chapter 2 to think if your theory is correct about which side is which, what's going to happen to those 20 or 30 individuals that were taken prisoner. But it doesn't show that. So.
Were the hordes dressed in the inappropriately overclothed for the desert?
Correct.
Okay, so that seems to be important. Yeah. I wonder if they're susceptible to cold. They appear to be dressed way too warm for a desert environment. Computer, chapter 4.
So chapter 4 begins with the visuals in the holodeck take a while to spin on, and instead you hear this sort of ethereal flute music, and it played on like a natural flute, not like a metallic flute, but like a bone flute or something like that, playing this very eerie sort of tune. And as the tune winds, a scene begins to build in the holosuite, as if the holosuite computers are able to interpret this music as a story. And what you see is the planet Tethys, and it seems as if it is Tethys from thousands of years ago, a historical rewind. And it zooms out from the surface of the planet so that you can see the planet and its star and other planets in the system and everything like that. And the camera sort of pans from the planet itself to the star and begins zooming in on it a little bit, moving towards the star. As the song kind of picks up a timbre that would describe as like terrorizing or horrific or something more haunting, deeply affecting you, a tiny pinprick appears in the middle of their star, and as if like water rushing down a drain, their star seemingly melts into the system around and is replaced instead with a star of a different luminosity and a different color. And from that kind of drain point where you can see another star sort of appearing, a torrent of worm or crab-like creatures is pouring out in a stream towards Tethys and hits it. As the flute story begins to evolve, it shows this wave of creatures, like a relentless ocean, cresting over the planet until one large creature, which looks somewhat like a artistic depiction of one of the Epsilon creatures that you have seen, comes from this drained star and cradles Tethys in its many arms and holds it to its breast. Like snuggling.
So I look over at Lieutenant Narilla, and I'm like, just off the top of my calculation, the amount of energy displaced to go from the original spectrum to what it currently is thousands of magnitudes. Is my math off?
Narilla nods.
Yeah. What is Narilla's scientific specialty?
So I have focus in chemistry, astrophysics.
Astrophysics, perfect. I would like you to make me a 2 difficulty task roll to try to interpret more about what it is that you're seeing there. Because, yeah, this sort of defies explanations.
That would be science and...
Either reason? Science and insight or science and reason, either one.
And it's 2 dice?
So it would be 2d20, or if you want to buy more dice, it's a 2 difficulty task. So you have to get at least 2 successes.
Can I assist?
Sure, absolutely. Do you have an appropriate focus that would assist with something astrophysical?
Subspace mechanics?
That will absolutely work in this case.
Yeah, I thought it would.
Yeah, I know you thought it would.
Should we use
Joe's sensing a theme.
A momentum as well, maybe?
Yep. Yeah. We're puzzling and like asking the computer, what was the spectral luminosity of the star at time index XXX?
The computer doesn't respond. When you go, computer, what's the... There is no response. It doesn't even say, like, access denied. It doesn't respond.
Did it respond when we played the other chapters, the second and third?
The only interaction that you have had with the computer has been progressing through the chapters. You haven't tried anything else. This is the first time you've tried to engage with the computer for anything else. So it's almost as if the only thing you can do right now is engage with the holodeck program, which is weird.
I just look over at Tenari. I'm like, really? You cut me? All right, now you have to do the math. I smile.
We did isolate it as a security procedure.
Yes, but how can I mean, it definitely is this, but is it a G4 or a G5? That's going to make a difference.
Well, we'll get close enough. I have my comm badge. Computer.
There's no response, okay, which is weird. Alarming. Let's resolve the challenge. So you're buying one extra dice with threat. And Tobor, you're assisting. Roll your three dice and then go from there.
I got two successes.
All right, so you get your two successes. Tobor, you might as well roll to see if you get your momentum back.
13, which will succeed.
Okie dokie, you get your momentum back. There you go. So you're like doing the math in your head and calculating it and everything like that. You determine that not only would that have taken just an astronomical amount of energy, but you don't know of anything that could have generated that amount of energy. And specifically looking at the way that things interact with that star and the way that the holodeck is simulating it, you don't think that the portal is connecting two points in the same universe. You think they're totally separate universes, and it must have been some sort of like massive stellar level event that basically punched a hole from one universe to the other and has caused this to happen.
But it's like, for lack of a better word, the like quantum singularity opened a whole bunch of the stellar mass drained into that other universe.
Yeah.
And then by the time it closed, it was left with the whatever it was for the luminosity. The star got dimmer, right?
The star in System A, where Tethys is, got sucked down a drain.
Yeah.
That drain left a gigantic hole in the fabric of space-time. And that hole led to another universe where you can see another sun. And it is from that other universe that these creatures seem to have poured out of into Tethys.
But I assume since we didn't get sucked into a stellar hole when we were in Tethys, that somehow between then and now it's closed. And the current star in Tethys is much dimmer than the...
Yeah. Correct.
Question. Is there any similarity that we can see between this event and the event we saw with Navinod?
Interesting. There are probably a bunch of similarities. So there is aspects of subspace and space-time and weird gravitational pull at play. I hadn't thought about that.
We need access to the computer core to analyze it further, Mr. Tenari.
Okay. Computer, arch.
No arch appears.
That's worrisome.
Pause. We go back to the bridge. Ocean and Najar, as you are currently monitoring what is happening on the holodeck, Ocean, on your tablet, not on the main terminal screens, it reports that there have been 3 requests for access to the computer core, which were automatically rejected, and 1 request for an exit arch, which was deemed an action in violation of security protocol.
Is it still detecting the threat that it can't process?
As far as the computer core is concerned, the Epsilon event has not ended. It took the action that you requested when it shut off the transporters. And as far as it concerned, the Epsilon event hasn't ended, but it also doesn't seem to really know what it is that is happening. It's not really doing anything. It's just, what is this? This is weird.
From this console on the bridge, do we have the ability to send a message into the holodeck?
If you tried, it would ask you for voice authorization, and assuming that you give it, it would ask you what your message is. Which is also unusual for the computer. Normally it says, hey, computer, send a message to the holodeck. It just does it, right? This time it's saying, what is your message?
It appears the simulation has triggered the protocol. We recommend disabling or ending the program from within the holodeck.
Thinks for a second and says, message accepted. In the holodeck, in the kind of Epsilon protocol voice, you hear the message that Ocean just recorded, that the simulation triggered the protocol, and that recommendation is to end the holodeck program from within.
So, Josh, how many chapters were there?
There were 4.
So we're, in theory, done?
In theory, you're done.
Computer, end program?
The flute music stops. The stellar scene dissipates. You are in a holosuite. Ocean.
Got my comm badge?
Yeah. This time you actually hear action not permitted at this time. And Ocean, on your tablet, you report that the holodeck suite program has ended and that the computer is processing for end of Epsilon event. And basically, it's giving you a prompt saying something along the lines of unknown status of Epsilon event, no further incursions detected. Do you wish to end Epsilon subroutine?
Yes, and I will give it my voice activation as required. So.
Okay. Ends. The little purple button basically disappears from your pad, and you see a message basically reporting that any further logs since the beginning of the event have been sent to Epsilon Command, so that way you can be assured that even the log that you were doing at the time has been recorded and sent, and that the security lock on the deck with the holodecks has been lifted. Jar, if you're continuing to monitor the ship frame, those bulkheads that it had reported were closed have now opened, and Deck 6 is no longer isolated.
Looks like the lockdown is over, Commander. Never a dull day.
No.
Did Hopefully you dismiss everybody else on the bridge before you started talking about this, or were they still there?
Yes.
Good answer.
That's why I sent the science officer off.
Yep. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Tobor, you and Tanari, while you are in the holosuite, would basically hear in the Epsilon protocol voice, Epsilon event alert canceled by Executive Officer Ocean.
All right. Try to open the door then.
If you ask for the arch opens.
Yes. Okay.
Yep. That was interesting.
Commander, after you.
Yeah. We exit. And when I get outside the holodeck, I tap my comm badge. Commander Chai Zilrer. Status report, please.
Good to hear your voice, sir. Here's that whatever you guys were poking into, the computer couldn't quite recognize what was going on, but it was close enough to an event that it attempted to make a partial lockdown.
Lieutenant Commander Ocean. I lean over and quietly say to him, through the broadcast, should we not transport them all to holding and scan them?
I hand you the tricorder.
And I say, very well, if you wouldn't mind sending them to security cells in my office, I'll scan them and release them one by one. Then I start heading for the security office, chuckling to myself of sending the captain to the brig.
Yeah. So as you guys basically walk out of the holosuite, you are being transported.
Huh? Protocol.
I didn't see Tobor doing that. Nope. I'm assuming you guys have basically holding cells set up. Would you have transported them to individual cells or together?
The ship's not big enough, I think, to have a bunch of cells. So unless I needed to force field off other quarters, I imagine I only have one cell that could hold a couple of people in my office.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or a few people, so they might be a little bit crowded.
Okay, yep. The three of you are in a small cramped cell, seemingly in Najar's office.
That's because Inari, when the transport is over, he's just going to look up and say, computer, end program, just to make certain.
Lieutenant Tanari, you are not on the holodeck.
You never know.
Yeah.
But after a couple of moments of being cramped in there, Najar walks through the door and he's like, sorry for the redirect, but we decided since the protocol was initiated, we needed to scan you all to make sure you are who we think you are. So if you would back away from the force field, please, I'll lower it and then scan you one at a time. And he did bring two other guards in with him who keep their weapons leveled. But he does not act all grumpy and businesslike like Ocean did. He's still smiling.
Well, I would step forward first.
All three of them scan just fine. They show no Epsilon signatures.
That was crazy, sir. How did the computer wind up thinking that you had parasites in there with you?
Because apparently it seems that Tethys, through some sort of subspace dimensional folding, is the homeworld entry point of the Epsilon species into our universe? Galaxy? I don't know. Something. Yeah.
And Najar stops for a minute and he looks off again and he's like, wow. Sure, I'm glad I agreed to let Dorai bring stuff back with her. That was not the focus of our mission. I almost said no.
Good instincts.
Now that we have access to the computer, I do have one last question.
Of course.
Tethys' primary sun. Which star does it currently match?
It matches the second star, the one that came from the other universe.
Okay. Commander, you might want to take a look at this.
Like, peer over your shoulder?
And point out the spectral readings.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. So it didn't just open a hole into the subspace reality. It's completely flipped it, inverted it.
Inverted, it's a good way to put that.
Pritchard will be very interested to hear this.
In fact, I'm assuming at some point, Tobor, you...
I'm like senior staff to the conference room.
As you get into the conference room on your pad there, you notice that you have a message from Commandant Pritchard. There is no subject on it. It basically just says, "What the hell just happened?" And that's where we'll end for tonight. So there has been a bunch of information revealed this episode. I want to make sure that if you have any questions, that I take time to go ahead and clarify them to make sure that you understand them out of game and in game. Yeah.
I'm going to start with, we do further analysis and interpret what the like portal opening event was.
Sure.
I'm thinking like just the hole opened and like a bunch of the stellar mass drained into this other subspace dimension. And then when it closed, what was left is still the star. But you just was indicated like...
It was more like, imagine that two stars from different universes' subspace signatures became entangled, and one stole power from the other, kind of opened this hole in subspace that allowed things to happen, and what was left was more of one and less of the other. If that makes any sense? Doesn't make any sense, because it's Star Trek.
But there's something weird that happened.
There is definitely something weird. As you're able to take like these simulations that happened in the holosuite and run them through computer, hey, computer, how did that actually happen? The explanations that it spits out are totally wackadoodle. Yeah. Nothing, Narila, that you have ever heard of. Again, it's like a subspace entanglement across universes. Things that can't be intentional. Some weird natural event that must have happened. Because there's no like species or power or person or whatever that has anywhere near the amount of power that it would take to go ahead and do that. So it was some weird stellar event that kind of connected these two universes.
This might be a dumb question, but the two universes have then separated. That hole's gone now, right? But two suns like came together. We think they separated and left like just traces of that one in the other? Or
If you take two sponges and throw them together, water from one sponge and water from the other sponge kind of blend in the middle and explode all over the place, the best analogy.
But is there still a connection there, I think, is what she's trying to ask. And what I also want to know is, based on what we can see, do we still think that there is anything connecting these two universes, or do we think that anomalous event is over and this is just the aftermath?
Here is a question. When you guys were on Tethys, and if you guys don't remember from a couple months ago, that's fine. We can go ahead and figure this out. But how much time did you spend studying the surrounding space around Tethys? Or did you basically spend your time on Tethys?
The Dilemmas Christian showed up, saved Brazig, left to chase the probe.
Yep, and most of what you were doing was on the surface, right?
I took the scanny shuttle because my job was to investigate Tethys in general.
I thought it was a recovery operation, so I sent you with the Nessie because I wanted to know what happened to the colonists and everything.
Because we were investigating the colonists, we would have done like full planetary scans, but it would have been less about the space around it and more about the planet itself.
So what I will say then is, from the scans that you did take, now that you're looking at them with a more critical eye for this stuff, there's probably like a heightened level of subspace distortion above like the median baseline. So there could be some residual subspace pull going on there, but you didn't really take a lot of scans, so that's a really hard question to answer. But there's enough to go ahead and say, hey, now that I'm looking at this, there's some interesting stuff there, probably worth checking out at some point.
And then a second question I had, in theory, the Michael Collin is off looking for the source of the subspace disturbance. That is completely not in the direction of Tethys at all, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So they might be very interested in this information. Yeah.
Whatever's currently the source of the disturbance is elsewhere, not here.
Exactly. A really key observation.
Okay. We may need to figure out some distance and some...
Yep.
Drag time of like, how fast do two universes slide apart when they collide?
Exactly, yeah. It's like a universe quake. It's like Tethys is a fault line.
A project I'd like to work on with Lieutenant Narilla while we're traveling. Those six papers we got in edition one, I'd like to go over them with her, see if any of those have any bearing on what happened on Tethys.
So this is so you can prep for next time, Josh, as well?
Yeah, this is kind of a long-range thing.
I want to have the team look into the subspace ore the Breen were mining versus material from Tethys or the other universe. See if we can find a connection with all that stuff.
I have one question that I think Joe already covered this, but I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on this. The two sets of Mothralwins.
Yes.
There was one set that had the cold weather gear and one set that didn't.
Correct.
In the first one, there was only one cold weather person, and they were remarkably agile and fierce and took out a whole bunch of them.
Correct.
In the second one, it was the cold weather gear guys that were holding another one and indoctrinated the non...
Yep.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And the hive mind army was also the folks wearing the parkas.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure I had that clear in my mind.
Yep, yep, sure.
In my mind, it's like the queen thing showed up and started multiplying and got bigger and bigger and bigger till it like consumed
everything. There's obviously some symbolicism in the depictions that we had.
I have one more question.
I have one more answer.
So when the group first encountered the Epsilon species, they invaded through the mouth. Is that right?
Correct.
And then we're thinking this is Epsilon species coming through this portal to Tethys. Is that correct?
Correct. I think I understand where your question is going.
Okay.
In Chapter 2, you did not see a creature go into the mouth of the person that was indoctrinated. You think that there's possibly room for some sort of like artistic interpretation about what happened. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the indoctrination just happens differently. Just know that particular depiction just didn't show it that way. But there's a lot of interpretation.
No one species actually witnessed what was happening to report back. They take them and they come back with like blue-eyed demon type things.
And just to go ahead and make sure, like the blue eyes, they did fade also. While the indoctrination was happening, blue eyes, and then afterwards, it was like they made a full recovery.
It'd be interesting to note, just for a couple of things to throw out as food for thought, that Najjar would toss around during discussions once all information was on deck, whether or not Andorians can be affected, if we can figure that out from the information and videos that we had of all the species that they were trying to infect with Brazig because of the cold weather thing.
Well, also, depending on how literal the blue-eyed thing is.
That was
it. We have those three blue-eyed aliens who recovered suddenly that we rescued from the Bring.
Mm, you do.
And we don't know where they went.
And I was going to say, to our knowledge, we haven't seen anybody right after they were infected to know how long blue eyes could potentially last.
Or it's something to do with the exposure from the other universe.
Right.
And maybe now the Epsilon creatures have been here long enough that it doesn't happen. But back in the early days when they were still, for lack of a better word, contaminated with all the radiation from their own universe, it caused this eye effect.
These are all questions for next time. Join us next month as Season 2 of Star Trek Preservations continues with Tabletop Journeys.